hello there, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night. Greetings, greetings, one and all. I'm Rick Moore, along with, Tim Kearns will be here in a while. He's going to call in, I guess, in a little while. Bill Proski is our producer and engineer. Bill Newell. Oh, there it is. Just scared the bejeebers. He's calling me on the cell phone. Okay. Tim? Hello? You want to call me on the house phone so I can actually get you on the speaker? Thank you. All right, so hang in there. Oh, isn't this fun? This is so professional. Let's turn off the music. So we're awaiting Tim's call here so we can get him on. Bill Newell doing lots of interviews. I'm doing lots of interviews. We have many, many coaches' interviews from all different kinds of sports coming up this week, along with news. And don't forget our daily newscast, North Shore Today. The post North Shore Today has many, many different items of interest on it every single day that Bill comes up with. Along with our little newscast that we have. So please be sure to check that out. We have a bunch of new interviews up on the website this week. Oh, and of course, every week toward the end of the week, we have the North Shore Sports Desk with Nick and Nick and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk with Nick and Nick. So that's all a good reason to be checking out MSO News Sports. So today we have a couple of brand new posts up there, including a really cool story from Newburyport Field Hockey. The interim hockey coach up there is the daughter of the Pentucket field hockey coach, and they both have a long and storied history in the Cape Ann League. And I invite you to listen into that as we talk with the Newburyport High School interim field hockey coach Shannon Haley. The Clippers are tied for first place up there. Actually, they're half a game out. Bill Newell has his Endicott football coaches show with Paul McGonigal of the Endicott Gulls posted, and the Gulls, of course, at 6-0, having a fantastic year. We have a story up on the website about an arrest in Raleigh from the state police, and then, of course, we have our North Shore Today podcast. So I'm going to have to take a break and see if I can get a hold of Tim. I don't know where he went. He was ready to go, and then he dropped off. So I'll see if I can get a hold of him. And then we'll come back, talk with Tim about some high school sports, and we'll probably talk some Bruins and some Patriots. Then we'll get into high school football as we approach the playoffs, believe it or not. We're going to talk with Sean Driscoll, who is the football coach over at St. Mary's there, I think at number 3 in Division 6. We'll check that out in a minute. And plenty more coming up here on North Shore Sports Night. So stay with us. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, all is right with the world. We say hello to Tim Kearns. Hello, Tim Kearns.
Hello, Rick Moore.
All right, there you go. Enthusiastic plus. Tim, you know, there's so much to talk about. We're going to talk basketball later with Mike Grenier. We're going to talk some golf with Gary Larrabee. We're going to talk some football, some high school football with Sean Driscoll. But I got to get your opinion on Zappy Fever, because we watched the game yesterday. Martha and I watched the game, and it was kind of fun to watch, except that first period was so horrible. But the rest of it, the other three quarters were fine.
Well, I didn't think the first quarter was bad.
Oh, it was awful.
You know, I mean, you got the revolving door at right tackle named Isaiah Wynn. And, I mean, he couldn't stop a cold.
No.
He's just awful. I mean, you know, movement penalty gives up the, it was his side that gave up the sack, you know, and, you can't blame Zappy for that. You never saw him coming. Of course, he should know better than to turn his back on Isaiah Wynn.
Well,
the Belichick's got to come down and make a hard one. And who's the one guy on that offensive line whose name you never hear?
Andrews.
Andrews. Yeah. Well, they talked.
Oh, and the other guy, Strange. Oh, I heard both of those names.
You never hear his name.
I heard them both in good plays.
He just does his job.
Mm-hmm.
Got a block guy, he blocks him. He holds the block. On a run play, he's driving off the ball. You know, the kid is doing an outstanding job at left guard.
Yeah, he's so reminiscent of Logan Mankins, it's not even funny. He is...
Mankins came from, you know, not a good school, but, you know, didn't have the name that a lot of other guys had, and everybody's like, who the hell is Logan Mankins?
Right.
Well, he certainly showed you over the length of his career and his time in New England, you know, just who he was. You know, the kid is so reminiscent of a young Brady in that he's not daunted by the lights. He's cool. He gets back quick. He gets himself in a position to throw quick. He goes through his progressions, and the first man who's open gets the ball. Doesn't matter who it is. You know, he's getting the ball out of his hands, and that lessens the possibility of him getting sacked or coverage getting too tight. And he's willing to throw it into a tight space. But the one thing I noticed when the carrot filmed from behind and showed the replay, he throws the ball ahead of the receiver.
Oh, yeah.
So that the receiver is running into the ball.
Yep.
Time and time again, I saw that and I was like, this kid's amazing.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, he should be able to throw the ball with some accuracy because he threw like almost 6,000 yards just last year.
62 touchdowns.
Ridiculous. 6,000 yards. Some kids don't throw that in a four-year career. He does it in 1 year, and he threw for like 50-plus touchdowns.
What? 62. He had 62 touchdown passes last year.
Yeah, for Western Kentucky. It's like, come on.
I think...
Air Coryell.
Well, you give him credit, I think, for carrying out the plan. And it's funny. I remember the first year with Brady when I... with one of my great bold predictions, which I'm always 100% wrong on. I said, this kid, meaning Brady... he's good. He's going to be, a game handler, but he's never going to be spectacular because of the way they had the offense going. I'm watching this offense now with Zappe, and I wonder why they didn't do it, you know, with Mac Jones. But
well, I
have to think that
it's lesson learned. They didn't know about Brady. They wasn't sure. You know, he was sitting third in the depth chart, and then he moved up to second. And he got out there, and everybody talked about it every Sunday. You know, going to feed him a little at a time, a little at a time, a little at a time. And he just kept showing that he could handle more and more and more.
But I want to ask you about the coaching, because all we heard in preseason from all of the radio stations and all of the writers, you know, in Boston was that these two guys, meaning Patricia and Judge, didn't know what they were doing. And Belichick has lost it in all of this. Now, you know, maybe they don't know what they're doing, and maybe he has lost it. But for the last two games, the Patriots have looked pretty proficient. They've looked, except for the stupid-ass penalties, they've looked proficient.
That's the scary part, is how undisciplined they've been in terms of the number of... They had 8 first-half penalties yesterday. I mean, that's ridiculous for a professional team.
Yep.
And they were all on the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Really pisses you off. No, it's going to get crazy here. My wife just got home with my sister-in-law's 2 dogs.
Oh, geez.
And one of them's fine, but the older one is fine, but the 4-year-old is a psycho. So you'll hear him running around and barking. I think that they're being a bit more creative because they've seen him handle it. They know that from what Brady's experienced. Okay, let's give him some more. Let's take the shackles off a little bit, and let's see what he can do, because he can obviously throw the football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? And it was great to me. The most excited I got yesterday, believe it or not, was when Jonnu Smith got that pass, and he rambled for about another 25 yards on his own. I said, okay, he's arrived. Finally, we're using the tight ends.
Yeah, he's been the biggest disappointment in the last year plus. For the fans. And certainly, I mean, you know, he was well touted before they got him and went to Denver. So not able to either grasp the ball or the game plan, you know, the play, was really disappointing, and they didn't go to him. They didn't even put him on the field. So, but Belichick's trying to get him in, they're trying to work him in there, you know, with this kid throwing the ball, you know, maybe right now he's the answer. You know,
they had four receivers with four receptions at least. I mean, I think he threw the ball to seven or eight different receivers. But you know, Tim, just changing the subject here, the defense had given up what, 6 points through three quarters? Not bad.
Yeah, they're playing with a lot of intensity. They're getting a lot of solid play. Pressure off from the defensive line. Linebackers are filling in. They had two rookies at safety yet. This is ridiculous. And, you know, it was funny. Everybody was screaming about how Belichick lost and he can't draft. And there was a tweet out, yesterday. Yeah, Belichick can't draft, and it went through the starters that he's drafted over the last 3 years. And it's like, yeah, okay, Bill can't do it anymore, right?
You know? Well, I remember Tim Fox's first year. Who was it? Was it Lawyer Malloy? Well, who came before Lawyer Malloy? Oh, gosh, I can't think of his name. Two great defensive backs were rookies that year, Tim Fox and the other guy. It was of Malloy's ilk. And I remember John Madden once again comes on, and he talks about how the weak spot was the Patriots secondary. And it was like, have you watched a game with these two rookies? Have you done any homework at all? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Ray Claiborne.
No, it wasn't Claiborne. Claiborne was there before those guys. Fox and this other guy were rookies together. I don't know. I'll think of it. I'll have to look it up. But anyway, Claiborne was great. And you're right. The announcers yesterday did a good job in pointing out, the fact that so many rookies were playing so well yesterday. Now, if they can keep that up, we might have something going.
Yeah, I don't think Bill's going to waste a lot of time on dead wood this year. And I think that's been his message. And, you're either going to play up or you're going to sit down.
Yep. All right, we have to take a break here, Coach. And,
they don't want to lose.
Oh, hell no. All right, we're going to check in with Sean Driscoll in just a minute. This is North Shore Sports Night. That's Tim Kerms. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Poposky is our producer and engineer. And, of course, Bill Newell doing interviews as we speak at Scoreboard Central. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back. I think, did I lose you, Tim? You with us?
I'm here.
All right. Sean Driscoll is with us. He's the St. Mary's High School football coach. And, Sean, welcome back. You've had a few good weeks here.
Yes, thank you for having me back. Yeah, no, it's been a couple of good wins in the past couple of weeks, so it's been good.
I want to go back to the Fenwick game because that was one for the ages, man. Can you reflect on that?
Do we have to?
All right, let me do it this way, Sean. Suppose you were a fan in the stands and you didn't have a dog in the fight. How would that game have looked to you as someone who knows football?
Oh, I think it was a good high school football game. Good high school football atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
I think teams are very comparable. It is a rival, and you know you got two teams that have a history of battling one another, and you know came down to a couple things you wish we could have back.
Yeah, I understand that, and. Since that game, of course, you've got a big win over Arlington Catholic this past week, and maybe you could talk a little bit about that, and maybe reflect on the Bishop Stang game as well.
Yeah, I'll start with the Bishop Stang game because that was the recovery game after you know the tough loss to Fenwick late in the game and in overtime, and a game that we should have put away, and we made some mistakes down the stretch, which put us in a bad spot to get into overtime in that Fenwick game. But the Stang was a recovery game, playing a very well-coached Stang team that runs the triple option. And if anyone knows anything about that, it's very assignment football and discipline football. You got to play defensively to kind of slow them down. They have a couple of big backs that were doing some good stuff in previous games. And so we were concerned. We had to take the long trip down there and getting off the bus and coming off through a tough loss. And, you know, we had a decent week of practice, but I was worried about the hangover effect from from that game, but our kids bounced back and played well. You know, Derek Kalan just had a really good game, and you know, going back to the Fenwick, they have a quarterback that stepped up, a sophomore, Tyler Guy, played a good game in his opening high school football career against Bishop Fenwick, and had even a better game at Stang, and a great one last week. So he's been playing well for us these last couple of weeks, and it's just you know, the Stang game was a recovery game, and then we play, you know, Saturday night game, first Saturday game of the year at night, a little different atmosphere than we were used to, and came out and played a real well, really well coached AC team, Arlington Catholic, but some skill guys throwing the ball over the place, and we had some challenges there early, and we kind of took control halfway through the first quarter. So it's the last 2 weeks have been a good bounce back week after that tough one, but I think our kids maybe in some way, you know, as a coach, you look at some of the stuff and, you know, you lose a tough game like that. Maybe that makes you better down the stretch. I don't know. Yet to be seen, but we'll see.
Yo, Tim.
How you doing?
All right, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Rick was informing me with the rankings where St. Mary's is sitting right now. How much attention do you pay to that?
You know, I understand how the rankings work and stuff, and I know there's good things about it and bad things about it. But as I tell my kids, that is so far down the road. You know, if you can finish in the top 16, which we should be able to, and whoever's up next is who's up next. But don't really pay too much attention to it at this time of year. We have two regular season games left. I think as we get into the last week, you might see where we fall and start maybe taking a look on if it will be a home team or a away team. But our goal is always want to finish number one, and it's still out there. I think it's still out there. A lot of things would have to happen. But to be in the top three in this division would be, you know, quite a good regular season for us and get us into the playoffs with some good momentum.
I find it a little frustrating that the standings come out, the power rankings come out on Friday morning instead of on Monday morning, but, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, they've been doing better on the Tuesdays, I think. Now I've been told it's on Tuesdays because usually someone will make a comment to practice about it or whatnot. But, hey, you know, we got to stay focused and take each week at a time and each game at a time. We get a tough one this Saturday with Spellman, a little team in transition from their coach coming over, so we kind of know what to expect. We saw them earlier in the year and saw what they did. So now the challenge is to see what they're doing now and get ready, just prepare for them this week.
You know, Coach, we've known you for a long time, and the coaches in the conference, and the coaches in the Cal, and you know the Catholic schools around here, without getting political or anything like that. What happened to Cardinal Spellman? I mean, we're educators as well, and we see that happen. I know several coaches, really good coaches, Hall of Fame coaches, and so on, who have been driven out of the game for one reason or another. And I think that parents and others should really try to understand some of the obstacles that you face as a coach, because you're not just doing X's and O's with these kids. You're dealing with, first of all, a cultural diversity. You're dealing with many different intelligences levels. You're dealing with kids from different communities and so on. And I think people should try to understand that when they go watch a high school football game, a little bit about what you and your team and your assistant coaches have to do. And again, maybe just a thought on that, Coach, without getting political or anything like that.
Well, I always think as a coach, you want to deliver at the end of someone's 4 years or a year, or regardless how long they play, you want to deliver a good person, someone, you know, who knows what to work hard, how to do their job and get it done. So when they're done with high school, they had a good experience here. I mean, win, lose, or draw, I think that's the most important thing, and you want to develop relationships with these kids that hopefully will go on longer, and if they ever need help down the road, I think is probably the most important thing. Now, with that said, you know, as I tell my coaching staff, and other coaches will tell you the same thing, I don't think anyone prepares not to be successful as a coach. I think any coach prepares for a game, for a season, for a camp or whatever, is putting their best foot forward to have the success of the team. And I think sometimes people outside the organization do not realize that when things don't go their way. So I think that's a difficult thing, especially now with social media and everything else. But, as I tell my guys, we just, you know, keep your head down and just keep doing what we're doing and grind. And you're trying to do what's best for us here for 55 guys in a school community, not what's best for a few individuals that might not like what their role is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. And I think in coaching and, like you said, any type of leadership role, you have to make decisions that are not happy all the time. And I think you have to learn to take the criticism. And, you know, most leaders know when they make good decisions and they can look themselves in the mirror and say, I did the right thing. And some know when they mess up and make mistakes and don't make the best call and earn up to it. So it has a lot to do with it. I don't know the whole situation down there. I know the person that was there was a good guy, good coach. He worked at it. He was just about taking the turn with the program when he took it over.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a couple wins under their belt. So, you know, with that said, don't know really what the how it all came to the end, but he's a good guy, and he seemed like he was getting things turned around there.
John, does St. Mary's have the user's fee for sports?
No, they do not.
Okay, because I know, you know that impacts a lot of public schools where they've implemented the user fee, and parents go, well, my kid's paying to play. I want him to play.
Yeah, you know, that was a fair.
Get to the varsity level, they don't understand. You know, it's varsity sports is all about going out there and winning.
Right, it's a different game, and again, as I say to my guys, it's not always about winning. It's, you know, development of youth and kids and stuff like that at the same time, and you want your program to be successful. But yeah, the user fee thing in public school is always tough, especially in certain towns, and I think people live with that as well. I'm paying $500 to play football. My kids should play. And you know what? There's something to be said for that as well. So I think I'm fortunate where I'm at that there's no user fees here.
Gee, John, you could be a diplomat. I love the way you're explaining this stuff to me, man. That's cool. I love it.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Coach, tell me a little bit about where you are in terms of rating your team right now and stuff that you saw that you want to iron out, things that you had to get settled, and maybe some of the that you're happy with now, and maybe some of the things that you're still working on. Of course, everything's a work in progress. I get that. But in terms of, you know, what you're happy with and some of the sore spots, if you would, without giving away the farm.
I'll tell you what I'm really happy of and proud of my team with is the relentlessness on defense we've had, you know, especially the last couple of weeks. We're playing really well defense. We've got a lot of speed to the football, which is all you can ask. Very little in the mistake department. You know, and then, you know, offensively, we put some points up the last couple of weeks. And we're doing a better job of finishing plays and finishing drives and not making that key mistake to change a game. So that on that, those are some of the positives. With that said, you know, you come in today, you work out with your team, you watch some film, and you go through the mistakes from Saturday night's game, some of the stuff we can improve. And, you know, basically some of the stuff is we got to go back to basics on some things, mm-hmm. you know, ball handling, open field tackling, things like that. And the stuff that we hop all the time on here that you got to make those individual plays, those tackles in space, all that stuff that wins games at the high school. The good teams get that done. And at times we didn't do a very good job of that on Saturday against Arlington Catholic. But with that said, getting back to basics, you're about just over halfway through the year. When it comes to getting to the playoff season and then Thanksgiving, I just think you have sometimes got to throttle it back. You got so many hours in a practice already. You already got your thing. You're getting your game plan in now, and you're moving forward into the week, you know, and just try to brush up some stuff individually.
Has Bill Belichick called you about coming and talking to the team about team discipline and execution so they're not taking 8 penalties in a half of football?
Well, yeah, well, that's one of our things that, you know, we talk about. We had some penalties on Saturday, too many, and then the week before we had a few, and that's some of the stuff we got to brush up on as well. So we have to coach that better and that discipline. And, you know, some of the penalties are penalties, you know, they're penalties. Some, you know, who knows if it's a penalty or not. But at the end of the day, we can't have those mistakes because when you're in a big game, they come back to haunt you later on. And it's just like turnovers, as far as I'm concerned. You get a big play, and you get a 10-yard holding penalty. That's the stuff we got to eliminate, and we've had a few of those this year.
I want to ask about strategy, Coach. When you look at video, and I asked this of, I think I asked it of Coach St. Pierre over at the prep.
Mm-hmm.
Do you look at video at your own team as though they were the opponent? In other words, you're trying to sit in your opposition coach's chair to look at your team. Do you do that?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. We look at what we do week in and week out as a team, and then you go back and look at some of the key spots. Obviously, you know your quarterback, your inside player by your linebackers and defensive line, and you look at the individual plays and what we could do better. And, you know, at any level, nothing's ever going to be perfect. You know, you could strive to get to that perfect spot there. But with that said, you go back to the film, you look at what you're doing wrong, try to correct the errors, and you hope you don't see him again. They're probably going to pop up somewhere along the way. But little technique stuff, if you got to pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of that self-scouting ourselves here.
Self-scouting, yeah. Okay.
Say, okay, this is good for us. This is not great for us. We have to work on this more because we want this to be good for us. So I think that's the way you look at your own, you know, your own film. And you're watching an opponent. Obviously, you try to pick the spots where, you got to stop some of their best players that they have, and maybe some of the spots you could take advantage of based on where your players are. So, yeah, you know, it's a way to develop your team when you're watching yourself play. I think it's almost better than a practice sometimes because they can see what you're talking about on the practice field and on the game field, and they see it in person, and you go over it again. So I think it's a key in all football. I think in any sport, video is key now.
Tim?
As you can watch the last couple of weeks of the season, it sounds so strange to be saying that already. Before you head to Thanksgiving and then the playoff. How much playoff will be played before Thanksgiving? Is it at least one or two games?
Yeah, so it's a 8-game season, and then you start your playoffs week 9 and 10. And then if you're fortunate enough to get to the round before Thanksgiving, there's possible 3 games before Thanksgiving, if you're fortunate.
Okay.
All right, Coach. One more, Tim.
Are they going to decide the Super Bowl champions before Thanksgiving or after?
Oh, no, it's after. It's the first week in December.
Okay.
Well, Coach, you've got Cardinal Spellman. You're going to be at Manning on Saturday?
Manning Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. It's senior day. Some stuff planned there at the field. So hopefully we come out and represent ourselves well and send the seniors off in one of their last official home games in a good note.
And it sounds like you're having fun again this year, Coach.
Well, I'll tell you what the most important thing to me is when you go to any job or any work you go when you're working with good people. I got a great coaching staff. I work for a good, great administration at the school, very supportive across the board. Mm-hmm. And our kids they work hard. They're very respectful. And that's all you can ask for. We get good people around here teaching that stuff. So it's always good. And that makes it into a fun year. Hey, look, at the end of the day, I think some of my better teams as people and stuff didn't have the greatest years. And it was still great to come down to work with them and stuff. So, yeah, we're fortunate. You know, we've had some big games here that we've won and coming together as a team the last couple of weeks. So, we're excited to finish the season strong.
Going to be interesting down the stretch. Coach, we'll talk to you again very soon.
Thanks. Anytime, guys.
Thank you.
See you, Sean.
All right. Good night. That's Sean Driscoll, who is the coach at St. Mary's High School. And, Tim, I think there's two more games, and then the playoffs begin. So it's kind of weird.
It's crazy. Every year it changes. You know, you have to write something down. Refer to it.
All right, let's get moving here. We'll check in with Gary Larrabee in a second here. This is MSO New Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell anchoring things, of course. He is our sports director, among other titles as well. We'll take a break and come back with Gary Larrabee. This is North Shore Sports Night.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore. A real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Andersen Windows. Andersen is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Andersen Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. We're joined now by sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee. Among the raindrops, we need the rain. But, Gary, how are you?
Swimmingly, Richard. How are you?
Swimmingly, okay. I'm keeping my head above water. How are you doing, Tim?
Oh, God.
Oh, they're really...
I'm not even going to use, because those are just titanically bad jokes.
Okay, I thought they were pretty punny. Well, Gary, welcome back.
Great to be back. I think we have to start tonight, guys, with some high school North sectional golf results from this afternoon. How about that?
Tremendous. Up-to-the-day breaking news. I love it.
Division I North. We had the North sectional up at Renaissance Golf Club up in Haverhill. And the defending state champion, St. John's Prep, did not fare too well, Tim. They finished fourth, with three teams qualifying for next week's state finals. In fact, today they were not at the Renaissance. I'm a week ahead of myself. They were going to be the state finals in Division I. We'll be at the Renaissance Country Club next Tuesday. Today they were at the Meadow in Peabody. Winchester shot a stunning 1 under par, 287. Which is unbelievable golf at the high school level. We're talking about the conditions they had today, Tim. That's 1 under par for the four best scores that Winchester High School returned. BC High was second at 296. Andover was third at 297. They move on to Renaissance. And St. John's Prep came in fourth, five shots behind Andover.
Wow.
They had three solid scores in all 74s by Terry Manning, Eli Trebotis, and Trip Hollister. The downfall for the Prep was that the next three plays, they had six players entered, the best four scores count, and the next three players all shot 80.
Gee,
I've never
seen an 80. What's that like?
And these high school kids... That takes two of us, but this is serious stuff. Tim, a lot of these guys are going to be playing, or some of them would be playing Division I golf at the college level, but unfortunately, St. John's Prep, the defending state champions, will not get a chance to actually defend next week at Renaissance. But a good season for the Preps, as we expect them to win it every year, and they can't. So tomorrow we have Division II. With Beverly, Davis, Bishop, Fenwick, Marblehead, and Mascanoma playing at Robert T. Lynch Municipal in Brookland, the old Puttingham Meadows. And Division III is at Black Swan up in Georgetown here on the North Shore, involving Essex Tech, Gloucester, Hamilton, Wenham, Ipswich, Manchester, Essex, Rockport, and Swampy. So let's hope the local teams fare better tomorrow than they did today.
Yeah, I was subbing today at school, and one of the afternoon classes, kids were talking about the golf team playing in the tournament and playing up at Georgetown. And I'm like, wow, these kids are really good. I mean, they're following their friends on the golf team. And that, you know, that's one of the sports where they don't get a lot of ink, but all of a sudden there were these kids that were, you know, following them and knowing where they were going.
And where were you subbing today, Tim?
Oh, Gloucester, of course, Gary.
Oh, I should know better. Anyway,
that's the only place I go.
Oh, man.
Well, I know the enemy there.
Well, we'll talk about next week, talk about how our teams do at both the sectionals tomorrow. And then next week, we've got Division I on Tuesday, which we won't really care about too much. We have Division II on Monday at Maplegate, and then Division III is also Tuesday at the Ledges out in South Hadley, which is out near UMass.
So that's the high school report for tonight, guys. But more interesting or equally interesting, Tim, was who won on the big show yesterday and the big events in the worldwide pro golfing tours. Were a couple of K-men, Keegan Bradley, Massachusetts and Vermont's own, won for the first time in 4 years over in Japan, of all places, and Brooks Koepka, who hasn't won in a long time either. He's been dealing with some injuries and playing, of course, on the famous or infamous LIV Tour, and he won in Saudi Arabia. Did you see who he beat in the playoff, Tim?
No, yeah, no, Gary. I have the PGA website, and they don't list the live results.
No, they do. You have to go to the live tour website. But he beat in the playoff. He beat in the sudden death playoff another Massachusetts bred golfer, Peter Uihlein.
Don't recognize that man.
That's Peter Uihlein, former All American and U.S. Amateur champion from. At Oklahoma and from down on the South Shore. His dad was the made a Titleist and FootJoy, a household word brand name around the world in golf. And we all joked about Peter being recruited, if you want to call it that, for the LIV Tour, despite no real significant victories anywhere in the world as a professional, but his father is Wally Uihlein from Haverhill and the former CEO and chairman of the board of Titleist FootJoy. So Peter Uihlein is finding himself a little more credibility today, even though he lost the sudden death playoff with Brooks Koepka. Keegan Bradley won, and both Keegan Bradley and Brooks Koepka were very emotional in their TV interviews after the victory, because they both were wondering if they were ever going to win again. Because Keegan Bradley won the 2012 PGA Championship and has been pretty much been forgotten ever since. But
yeah,
nice weekend for Keegan Bradley and Brooks Koepka, and a pretty good weekend for Peter Uihlein.
Well, that's good for Keegan, because you know he always wanted to see the local guys do good, and we know he struggled, you know, and you know there are times he gets going early in a tournament, but then Sunday rolls around and it doesn't look good for him.
And, you know, as good as these guys are, Tim, it's really true when they say they wondered if they were ever going to win again. But here, Koepka, a four-time major champion winner, won it again. And Keegan Bradley, a one-time major champion winner, he wins again.
Gary, did you see the payouts on Brooke Koepka, the money he earned yesterday?
Ten figures, I believe.
Yeah,
whatever.
I'm looking at number one, Brooks Koepka, -12, $4 million.
A good weekend's pay for a good weekend's hard work. Huh?
Oh man, I don't even know what that means, but yeah, I can see why they go to the LIV Tour if you can win that.
And I don't know how much Peter won, but Peter probably won a couple million for finishing second.
$2,125,000.
Yeah, so Peter's doing okay, and he probably got a very nice trust fund coming his way from his dad at some point. But big money out there, as we know, and of course, it's the way of the world. And
jeez,
one more tournament on the LIV Tour, one more tournament in 2 weeks at Doral, at Trump Doral, down in Miami, and it's going to be strictly a four-team format, 12. Four-player teams from the LIV Tour playing for another enormous amount of money over 3 days. And then I'll wrap up the first season of the LIV Tour, guys.
Yeah, okay. I just want to get your take on a couple of these stories from the ESPN page. Jack Nicklaus fresh big prices may hurt some PGA Tour events where they're up in the ante to match the LIV Tour. Your opinion?
Well, Jack's opinion is quite highly respected in every respect, and he may be correct. I'm not sure. We'll have to see how that plays out over the next couple of years. But Jack has every right to his opinion, and of course, he helped make the PGA Tour what it is today. We'll have to see how that one plays out over the next couple of years.
And Matsuyama said that the live players should earn ranking points.
I certainly agree on that one. No question about it. And I think that'll happen sometime, possibly in January or February, because the first major comes up in April, of course, at the Masters. And they have to make some hard decisions on how they're going to figure out getting these top-name players from the LIV Tour into those tournaments, if they've earned their way or not. So I got to believe something's going to break on that aspect. And I agree with Matsuyama on that one, and we'll see how that breaks. And one more thing to talk about on the worldwide professional golf circuit, guys. Everybody was pretty happy yesterday as well with the fact that Fred Couples broke his age by 3 shots, shooting a 12 under par 60. And then he won the Champions Tour event out in Cary, North Carolina.
Wow.
At the ripe young age of 63. Fred hadn't won for a few years. He hasn't been playing much anyway. He's pretty much winding down his career, but everybody's friend, Fred Couples, wins again. So quite an interesting weekend of winners on the big-time events. Couples, Koepka, and Keegan Bradley.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Freddie's had that bad back for years, right?
I'm sorry?
Freddie Couples has had that bad back for years.
Oh, yes, off and on. Yeah. He did play at Stalemans, the 2017 U.S. Senior Open, and it's a fringe contender during those 4 days at Salem, but he was playing, and he didn't talk too much about his back, but great to see him back in the win column. Not that he needs the money. And a couple more things to share with you guys, if I might.
Mm-hmm.
We should mention that Kirk Hannafeld from Salem and Gloucester native Dan Gillis from Navnassic Lake competed this past weekend in the 2022 National Professional, I should say Senior, Championship for club professionals 50 years of age and older. Hannafeld, of course, is 66 and a half. He missed qualifying for the fourth and final round by 1 shot. He made it through the 36-hole cut. Dan Gillis missed the 36-hole cut, so Dan only played 36 holes. So those are our two players at the National Professional Senior Championship. And then we should also talk very briefly about a big, big party they had down in West Palm Beach, Florida on Friday night, guys, for Beverly native Ron Kirby, who was celebrating his 90th birthday, one of the unsung heroes in worldwide golf course architecture. Ron, as you may remember, guys, I probably reminded you more than enough time that he designed Old Head over in Kinsale Island, one of the most spectacular golf courses in the world. He's had a great career in golf course architecture. Still doing a golf course in Barbados called Apes Hill, a restoration job. At the age of 90, he's still doing all kinds of great stuff in golf course architecture. And they had a nice, nice big party for him Friday night in West Palm Beach. Happy birthday, Mr. Kirby.
I guess there's hope for us after all, you know. We can follow that example. That's pretty cool. Keep
speaking
on.
Tim, Rick, speaking of Jack Nicklaus, Jack, we could not attend that event. He was traveling, but he did send a wonderful video, which I get to see today, a wonderful video from Jack. Ron Kirby used to do some work for Jack over in England and Europe. A very nice message from Jack congratulating Ron Kirby. 90 years young and still living the dream.
Wow. Gary, before I let you go, comment on the Peabody City Council's edict to the Salem Country Club to grow more trees.
Yes, the enforcement order has been finalized. It's been given, I guess, delivered to Salem Country Club. There may also be a fine in the range of $700,000 involved.
Yikes.
For cutting down too many trees at 233 trees times $300 each, but they're going to get to a final resolution, I think, in this controversy that's lasted most of the year very shortly, and everyone will move on, and Salem Country Club will continue to be the great golf course and the great club it is, and we'll all get over it.
All right. Hey, listen, you be safe, be well. I wouldn't be traveling into Salem this month. I'd wait till November if you have any business in town.
Good idea, but there's always room for you at the Peabody Essex Museum, Rick.
Yeah, I may be on display there at some point. Hey, Gary, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Look forward to it.
Gary, take care.
Thank you.
That's Gary Larrabee, who is a sports historian and a golf expert. Does anybody know more golf than Gary, Tim?
No,
just plain no. Lordy mercy, what a font of information. Incredible. All right, we're going to go to the next sports genius when we talk to Mike Grenier here in just a minute. We'll take a quick break and come right back. This is North Shore Sports Night. Glad you're with us.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, another sports writer that we are so lucky to have with us most of these Monday nights here that we're on. And Mike, first of all, welcome back. How are you?
Well, good, Rick. That's a nice thought you had. I think you'd rather have Bailey Zappi on, though.
I don't know, man. It looks like, for God's sakes, he should be riding a bicycle with training wheels. It's just amazing. But listen.
It's funny. We mentioned him. I mentioned him as a joke. However, when you think about where he's come as a third-string quarterback, under the coaching of Belichick,
mm-hmm.
I think people have been down on Belichick because the Patriots haven't been good since Brady left. However, that was going to happen, okay? But he takes a third-string quarterback basically out of a Division II type of school, and he beats teams back-to-back in crushing fashion, okay? And to me, some of the Bailey Zappi, of course, has worked hard to get where he is. But to me, the coaching job that Belichick has done with this young kid to put him in a position to win games the last 2 weeks has been ridiculous. 29-0 over the Lions and 38-15 yesterday. I think it's just remarkable what Belichick has done with this kid.
I think that's a perfect segue to go from the second winningest coach in NFL history,
right,
to the rookie coach at the Boston Celtics, so it's a perfect way to get things started. And I would like to start, Mike, by Tim,
sure,
by saying I watched one of the exhibition games against Toronto, the first three quarters, I think it was, a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, and I watched it, and I thought to myself, you know what, if they have this kind of intensity, they'll go 82-0.
You're right.
And then I want to ask you your opinion on let's start with the coaching staff. Let's start with Mazzulla and what's going on with that, and what's your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think, Joe Mazzulla, he's only 33 or 34 years old. He's a kind of a local product in the sense that he went to Bishop Hendricken in Rhode Island, and he's from that area, Rhode Island. And he's sort of an underdog story because he played college ball at West Virginia, and then he started off low-key these places that we've never heard of as a coach, like Fairmont State, and it's not like he was an assistant coach in Indiana or Duke or anything like that. He came out of the woods, and it was, Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge who recognized a potential talent there, and I think both of those guys deserve credit for grooming him, and, he was on Udoka's staff. Amy Udoka, whose name should not be spoken about these days, right? And obviously, I think the players must like him a lot, Mazzulla, because from what I saw in the preseason, Rick, and I saw all four games, they were really listening to him. They were buying into what he was doing. And of course, naturally, he was also experimenting. They were using 12, 13, 14 players within the course of the game. So it all starts tomorrow night with the Philadelphia 76ers, and I think, it's funny, I was talking to someone, they asked me how many wins I thought the Celtics would have this year, and I'm going like, well, somewhere between 48 and 60, because I think it's going to take an adjustment period, first of all, you know, and they do not have Robert Williams. So if I'm thinking the lower end of the scale, like 48, 49 wins, I think those are the factors. I think they don't have Danilo Gallinari. It's going to be an adjustment period with a young coach, and the schedule early on, they play a lot of road games. So, you know, I have to be factoring that in. Then on the other hand, if they get off to a fast start, I can see them winning 59, 60, 61 games because they do have that kind of talent. And there's a lot of positive karma right now. I saw those uniforms. The Celtics are going to wear a lot of Bill Russell apparel this year. And I absolutely, and you know, guys, you and Tim and Rick, and Gary Larrabee, we appreciate how far and how long the you know, the legacy is with the Celtics and Bill Russell, his what he meant to the franchise. And his name will be brought up to those current Celtics players many times during the season. So I think there's a little bit of incentive there. And, of course, the biggest incentive for the younger Celtics players, like especially the Jaylen Browns and Jason Tatum's of the world, is the fact that they came so close to winning it all last year within two games. So there's a tremendous amount of incentive. There's a tremendous amount of promise on this team. And so I'm very excited about the season. How about you guys?
Well, you know, I think, you know, you're talking about the guy seemingly buying into the coach.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I coach high school several sports. And oftentimes it's not the head coach that has the ear of the players.
Right. It's the assistant coaches.
Coaches who have... They work in the shadows, but they work really intensely and closely with these guys. Offense, defense, you know, work, conditioning. And so these guys have the ear of the players oftentimes a whole lot more than the head coach does.
Right, right.
So I think he's benefited from that opportunity to
Correct.
Be an assistant and work as he has with the players.
Yep.
And so now when he steps up, there's a familiarity, there's a comfort that they've established with him. And the key to it, I think, is he's going to be able to maintain that closeness while now having, in essence, a different type of relationship with them.
Right, exactly, Tim. I totally appreciate that. And Rick, you know, obviously I think the Celtics could have gone outside their network and gotten an accomplished or, you know, a veteran coach who's, you know, who's done it before with some other team. But the Celtics players would not have known this a veteran coach coming in here for quite a while. It would have taken a couple of months, however many months, to buy into a new system. With Mazzulla, he's probably going to run the same plays that Udoka. He's going to put his own twist on things, but he's going to basically probably run the same offense and defense that Udoka ran. And obviously, Udoka did a great job the second half of last year when the Celtics players finally kicked in and said, okay, yeah, we need to pass the ball more. And that included, in particular, Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And Rick, I think we got to mention Jaylen Brown. He had a phenomenal preseason.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched those. He was by far the most dominant player in the preseason in the Celtics uniform.
And he's been outspoken as well.
Sure, absolutely. He's been outspoken. And he's entering his seventh year, Tatum. It's hard to believe. Tatum is entering his sixth year, and he's like, what, 23, 24 years old? That's ridiculous. And Tatum played pretty well in the preseason. However, his minutes were limited, and he wasn't going like 100% all out, whereas Jaylen Brown seems to be establishing that he wants to get to the next level, meaning like maybe an all-star type level. So he played about 23, 24 minutes a game. But in those 23 and 24 minutes, he was getting 22, 23, 24 points. So I think he's eager to get the season going. I think the whole team would like to prove itself on the big stage again, and maybe whether they play Golden State or the Memphis team, which is a great young team in the postseason, if they can reach the NBA Finals. I think they're sort of like thinking big. They're not thinking, let's just take our division or just take the Eastern Conference. They're thinking big.
They're also
back to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, they're also not saying feed me, feed me. I want the ball. I think there's a couple things here, and I think when the history of the Celtics is written of this team, if in fact they can go all the way,
right?
It's going to go back to Brad Stevens because he had this team on the brink a few years ago. Remember?
And, yeah, I sure do.
And then the culture sort of fell apart, and I think he recognized. He lost the room, in a sense, but he's so basketball savvy that he could figure out, you know, how to hold it together by stepping upstairs, which is, to me, remarkable. And he put all these pieces in place, and as you mentioned, and Tim, I think, was eloquent in his discussion of Missoula as his assistant coach moving up. Stevens recognizes that, but I wonder if you guys saw the thing in the Globe about the Sports Illustrated article coming out on the front page, the cover of the Sports Illustrated.
I've heard is they're going to be on the cover.
Okay, well, apparently it was supposed to be Tatum and Brown.
Yep.
And they both said, we have to have Marcus in with us.
Oh, sure.
So talk about a different mindset for those guys.
Absolutely. You know, of course, Marcus Smart's going to be a big, big part of this new season. And having seen the preseason, I love the addition of Malcolm Brogdon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was one game, Rick, where he played like 20 minutes. He had 9 assists. He is definitely a pass-first point guard that will be an incredible weapon coming off the bench, let's say 6 or 7 minutes into the game, because he's a capable scorer. However, I think he's looking at his role as a passer when Tatum and or Brown are on the floor. So if he's got that mindset, being a pass-first guy and not caring about his scoring, that's precisely what a new coach like Mazzulla will appreciate and what Celtics fans and followers will love about Malcolm Brogdon. Rick, I think the other guy that we mentioned him a couple weeks ago, that the Celtics added a veteran. Of course, it was supposed to be Gallinari, but he's out for the year with an ACL, and they brought in Blake Griffin, a former All-Star. And, you know, I think the jury's out on him. I saw him play that stint where he was like shot 1 for 6 on the floor. He had 9 rebounds. But he kind of looked old and not quite into it and not in shape. But that could just be his way because he's 34 years old, that it's going to take him a while. He's not going to, like, blow off all his energy in the preseason. He's been through so many of those.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to save his energy for when he's in those big games and playing regular season and playing. If it's 8 minutes, that's fine. If it's 16 minutes, that's fine. If he's willing to play that role, a subsidiary role, and be a scorer off the bench or a rebound, I think that would also play into what Missoula's plan is for him.
You know what they're looking for? They're looking for the second coming of Bill Walton.
Yeah, that's not going to happen with Griffin.
No, well, I think they're looking for the infusion of a veteran who's been injured, who's played a lot of games.
Right.
And he has just been so effusive in his praise of the Celtics system,
yep.
The Celtics.
Absolutely.
He's so different here than any other place I've been. And, you know, which at least tells you on the surface, he's going to look to integrate himself. What do you need me to do? How can I best be used? Because that was Bill Walton when he came in the 85-86 season. It
yep.
was, you know, this is like the last hurrah. How many years do I have left? You know, and they didn't play him a lot, but when they got into the game, we all saw what he did. He
That's
was
right.
like rejuvenated. He was reborn because he didn't have to be the man. He could go out there and give them 10, maybe 15 minutes of hard play, quality defense, passing, you know, the famous bank shot. Okay,
right,
you know,
exactly.
That's what I think they're looking for Blake Griffin to do.
No, I agree.
That energy, you know, that positivity.
Blake Griffin doesn't have to play 23, 24 minutes, Tim.
No.
He can give him 12 minutes of hard work coming off the bench and rebound the way he's capable. Because he's like 6'9", 6'10". He's still gifted physically. He can do it, you know. So if he can exert himself for those 10 or 12 minutes and make an impact off the bench, that's all that Missoula and the Celtics are looking for. And the guy who, by the way, who clinched the spot on the roster that I really like. And Rick, I think I mentioned 2 weeks ago, Noah Vonleh, a 6'10" guy who's had, what I love about him, he's got 4 or 5 years of NBA experience. He played a couple of years with the Portland Trail Blazers. He played with the Knicks when he averaged like 8.5 points a game just 4 years ago. And then he fell out of the league, played in China last year, kept himself in shape, and he clinched a spot with the Celtics. I talked to him one day a few years, 3 or 4 years ago, when he came in with the Knicks, the Garden, and they say, "Hey, Noah, you played a little bit at Havel High School, right, before transferring to prep school?" He said, "Yeah, how did you know that?" I said, "I just know your background from Havel High School and that you're a Havel kid." And he was really a pleasant guy to talk to. He was thrilled to be in the NBA at the time. At the time, he had a good role with the Knicks, and I think he's another type of guy like Blake Griffin, certainly not an all-star type player, but who can come in and give the Celtics 10 minutes. He's a legitimate 6'9", 6'10". He had a preseason game where he had 14 points and 13 rebounds. And I think, again, a role player who can, you know, maximize what he can do off the bench. And when guys like Jaylen Brown and Al Horford and guys like that are sitting down, Noah Vonleh and Blake Griffin can fill those roles for a few minutes.
Yeah, you know, look, I think it goes back to, you know, Jason Tatum not having a strenuous preseason. It's
right.
Going to be a long season.
Yeah.
You know, he and Brown are going to play a lot of minutes. They're going to on the floor every big moment that's going to be played this season for the Celtics. And so if he's in shape, you know what he's going to do. You know what his capabilities are. You know how many points and rebounds, especially the points that he's going to give you. So this will allow the coaching staff to bring in Griffin and all these other new guys and play them and get them vested roles for the coming season.
No doubt. And Rick, I think, and Tim, I'm going to throw this out there. Who's our X factor with the Celtics right now? I think it's Robert Williams.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right, Rick? Because
yep.
He's been injured.
Yep.
He's come up sometimes with injuries that have surprised us. In other words, he's been playing well for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks or a couple of months, and all of a sudden, bingo, he's out for a while. And unfortunately, right now, he's out 8 to 12 weeks, and that cuts right into the season, into the heart of the beginning of the season here. We're talking all of October, certainly all of November and part of December. And, you know, we're hoping that when he does come back, he doesn't get re-injured, you know. So
right.
He's such a huge part of the overall plan, I believe, so that when he does come back, you want him to be 100%, not 90%. You want him to be 100% so he can go long-term and be available in March, April, May, and possibly June if they reach the NBA Finals. You want him to be there for the long run. So I'm hoping they bring him along slowly, so to speak, because I want to see him playing at 100%. Come Christmas time, you know.
Well, if the Celtics play the way they can, they won't need him right away.
Right. They won't need him right away. You're right. Horford is another a bit of an X factor because of his age.
Mm-hmm.
He starts he's age 36. Can he replicate everything he did last year? I mean, obviously, guys, we saw Horford play in the NBA Finals against the Golden State Warriors. He looked like the freshest body out there at different times.
Yeah.
Because Tatum and Brown had played a lot of minutes, and Horford, his minutes, because of his age, weren't quite what Brown and Tatum were playing. He looked fresh and had some dominating-type moments in those games against the Golden State Warriors. So you're hoping he can at least approximate what he did last season at age 36.
Tim, we got to finish this up. What's up?
Okay. You want me to talk now, Rick? After you've, like, hogged all the airways? I totally agree, Mike. You know, again, just having the big guys, just give them the ability to minimize his minutes, spot him where they really need him most. You know, these guys, 9'6", 10", you know, nice and long, full of energy. You know, it's, they've just got so many pieces that they can put out there.
I agree. It should be on paper. It's a really versatile team, a talented team, and I think a team that has the depth and the frontline talent to go back to the NBA Finals. And Rick, you'll love this. Of course, they open the season against the Philadelphia 76ers tomorrow night at the Garden. And the great Joel Embiid became an American citizen just 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yep. So that's a great opener for the Celtics. 76ers certainly will be one of the stronger teams in the Eastern Conference.
What they'll be on local channel, right? The Nesson?
Yeah, they'll be local, and of course
MSNBC, whatever.
Yeah, and then they go on the road for like three road games after that home game. They don't come back for a week and a half, and they play the Cleveland Cavaliers. So very interesting start to the season here. Three road games in the first four, and let's see what they're made of right away.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, take notes, take copious notes, Mike.
We will, Rick. We will.
All right, we'll see you next Monday.
Thank you, guys. Right. Appreciate it.
All right, Mike. Thank you.
Always
take care.
Bye-bye. Now.
Bye-bye. That's Mike Grenier, who is also a sports historian of sorts and sports writer. And, Tim, it was Mike Haynes who I was trying to think of.
Oh.
And you're, and he did. They did play with Ray Claiborne. You're right. It was Tim Fox, Mike Haynes, and Ray Claiborne.
Right.
All right. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right. Have a good week.
Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, who is our sports analyst and ambassador of goodwill. I'm Rick Moore. Our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, our Mr. Everything, Bill Newell. Check out the sports, the website from time to time each day, if you would, please. We've got lots of information up there. So on behalf of all of our guys here at MSO, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good evening.